meet yet. I'm Jeremy Tutt. I'm Justin Dock's brother-in-law. It's probably how I'm best known up here in the Northeast. If you've met my brother Craig, I'm his older brother. I've got a bunch of brothers, so you might have met some of them. This is my first time at Solar Camp, and I'm really excited to be with you guys. What I'm going to talk to you about tonight is already going on the screen. So back in 2015, my younger brother Craig met with another Christian. His name is Stuart Peck, and both Craig and Stu went to film school. My brother Craig went to the Art Institute of Atlanta to become a filmmaker back when he was in college. And then as soon as he got his degree, he went to Florida to scrub his brain and go to Bible classes for a year, because it was a really hard degree to get. He was in a very, very secular place. Stu got a degree, I want to say, in journalism, and did some work at a local station there in Bowling Green. So when they met up, Stuart was teaching a teenage Bible class at his church, and he was looking for a video that would help show something from the Gospels. He was teaching the Gospels. And so he jumped on Google and started looking for some free videos, and he couldn't find anything. He couldn't find anything cheap, and he couldn't find anything that was high quality. And so two media guys sitting across coffee said, "Hey, maybe we should do something about that." And so what they did is they came up with the idea of taking, at the time, their idea was take Stu and Craig and a host and fly over to Israel and rent a car for dirt cheap and throw their camera gear in their backpacks and travel around a country they've never been before and shoot like really good quality video. And they realized that was just really not the way to go about it. So since then, they started brainstorming, talking to other Christians. They came up with an idea to do a crowdsourced nonprofit, so they started a nonprofit production company to help create free Bible videos. They don't charge money for these videos, and they put them on the internet. So you can find all of their videos about the life of Jesus for free. I'll show you some websites if you can go to some of those sites. So since 2015, I think the team has made three trips to Israel, one trip to Turkey. We just went to Turkey in October of last year. We've done a series on the life of Jesus. We've done a series on the United Kingdom, so Saul, David, and Solomon. We're about to release something on the seven churches of Asia. We've started writing Bible class curriculum, doing podcasts. The team has grown. We've been very, very blessed with some really talented people. So just to show you what the team looks like, that's Craig and Stu at an opening at a release of one of our projects. That's the team in Israel shooting. That's the team in Turkey shooting. And then this is us in Israel shooting with the lead archaeologist at Shiloh in Israel. Really, really neat guy. He's in our series on the United Kingdom. That's us, I think, overlooking, I'm not going to guess. I think that's Hebron. That's us, Barry and I, my co-host, walking through the old city. That's us going into the Cave of Adullam. That's just a really neat four-wheel drive vehicle that we toured around the Valley of Elah in, so also searching for a king. There's some really neat things to share with you guys, but I have a couple of things I want to impress you with. That looks really fun, and it is really fun, but it's a lot of hard work. When we take our production trips, we're gone for about 2 weeks, a travel day on either side, and then 12 days in-country, and we work for 14 hours a day. So we're grabbing meals on the fly, we're getting hot and sweaty. There were places where it was 100 degrees, and Getty was really, really hot. We usually travel during June and July. Away from our families for 2 weeks out of the country. And then when we get home, there's the really glamorous work of the production guys sitting at a computer for hours a day working, and no one sees them working. So what I want to impress you with before I show you some of the really fun stuff is I want to impress you with the team of really talented Christians that are trying to serve God and share the gospel. I want to highlight the team and have them tell you a little bit about why we're doing what we're doing. So I think this next slide has a video with Stuart's topic. Maybe Stuart will talk.
Think of the thousands and thousands of hours that this team's put in. thousands of hours that this team has put into it. You think about the reason why. Why would you want to be part of this? And you think about what Anthony Media has set out to do. The Bible is so rich. It is worth it. And it's hard on all of us. It's hard on our families. Bless our wives and our kids who let us go for weeks. And bless the people who trust us with their money. It's because strangers tell us that it saves them from the dark.
The most important thing is making sure that we're faithful to the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And people are hearing that. And that it's a spiritual benefit. It increases their faith in God. It increases their faith in God's Son, in His Word. And it's worth it.
It's God.
Okay, did that look cool? But what did you hear them saying? What important things did you hear them saying? Yes.
That they definitely wanted to do this for the community, but their main focus is to be on God.
Okay. We're trying to glorify God.
They were saying that it was really kind of people to trust them with their money.
Yeah, so people donate to Appian Media. We're a nonprofit. No one is getting rich off of this. No one's getting rich. Actually, people are sacrificing. Even with those donations, a lot of the team are not getting paid what they ought to get paid to do what they do. So the guys, the production guys, they do not charge a full day's rate for the days they give us. So they turn down full day rates at other jobs to do what they do for us at a lesser rate because they think it's important. So I want you guys to hear that. They're sacrificing and being faithful to the text of the Bible, right? We're trying to be faithful to the Word of God. As fun as what we're about to all see is, we're not in the business of entertainment. We're in the business of educating people about God and His Word and His Son, right? So you'll hear more of that as we go. I'm treating that like it's a clicker, and it's not a clicker.
If I read the scriptures well, there are so many things there which seem to be a reality.
There are stories and people in the Bible that are easy to take for granted. Powerful kings, battles with giants, amazing faith, even overwhelming failure. The question is, do these narratives describe real events, or are they simply legends? What does the visible evidence indicate? Is there evidence for the United Kingdom of Israel?
Sometimes we do have questions where we scratch our heads, but in archaeology we say that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. We've only excavated about 5% of the land of the Bible. 95% is still underground.
Jerusalem, which is one of the most excavated places upon earth, has a black hole.
We're digging through layers of history.
Something definitely happened right here. Wow.
We are way off the beaten path now. Way, way off the beaten path. God's people demanded a king. God selected three men. An insecure man of great stature, a shepherd who slew a giant, and the wisest man to ever live. We are searching history, geography, archaeology, and scripture to find the answers. How would you respond to critics? Can the Bible be trusted?
Jerusalem itself needs in the fact that there is unequivocal proof that there is a connection to the Bible.
Everything that they found, that's exactly what you're trying to convey.
So we're not talking about fairy tales. We're talking about real people, real places, and real events. Come with us as we search for a king.
So that's the major production we released in 2019, a five-episode series on the United Kingdom. And primarily, it was a documentary, you can watch them all back-to-back, asking the question whether the kings of the Bible, whether there's evidence for them, whether they were fiction or whether they were real. So you can go and find that on our website. It's on YouTube. It's on Facebook. We have more to show you tonight. But I want you to meet the team. So Stuart is our co-founder and CEO. He lives in Indianapolis. My brother Craig is the co-founder and COO. He lives in Indianapolis as well. Barry Britnell is our CFO, researcher, and my co-host on several projects. He lives down in Athens, Alabama. And then that's me. And then Dan Kingsley, our executive producer and photographer. So when we go, everybody on the team has a different job while we go. Sometimes their roles overlap. But Dan is an oncologist. So he plays doctor in real life. And then when he goes with us, he's taking pictures. And he's so gracious and so generous. You'll probably see his daughter in a clip here just a little bit. Jet Kaiser is our director of photography, colorist, and sound designer. So, like right now, our most current production, it's done being edited, and the whole video has been given over to Jet, and he's going through and making sure that all of the colors from all of the different cameras match, and then they look the best that they can look. So he's going through the whole thing, correcting that digitally. And then his wife, Danny, she's also a photographer, a B-roll shooter. You guys know that guy. He's a writer, and he also has been doing a podcast for us. Matt Maudlin lives in Indianapolis, helps us with marketing. So those are the three big projects we've done so far. The 10-episode series on Following the Messiah, 5-episode series on Searching for a King, a grade school series, 13 episodes, they're only about 5 minutes a piece. And it's basically a grade school version of the life of Jesus, along with a study guide to go with it. And Barry, I mean, you look at Barry, he's got that cool hat. He's got such a cool hat. That hat goes everywhere with him. He's had the same hat ever since I've known him. And so when he does the thing for the grade schoolers, it's like Christian Indiana Jones walks on. He's got his hat. Although he's older in it, anyway. Harrison Ford's good. Let's see, so that was released in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. Study guides, those are not free, but one of the things we talked about after our first trip, so Craig and Stewart's idea was, that shouldn't have gone forward. Craig and Stu's idea was let's go to Israel and shoot videos and make videos available for free. That was a great idea. And then while we sat in the airport, we started getting more realistic. We have got hard drives full of footage that's not going to get used. And we do not want people to just binge watch our stuff like they binge watch Netflix or Hulu or whatever and go, oh, that was fun. That was a good however many hours of my life, and they're just done. We want them to engage with the Word of God. So we said, how can we help them do that? We need to slow them down and help them connect what they're seeing with the text better. And so the way that we thought to do that was to write some study guides. And so we've been writing study guides to accompany that, so that if a congregation or a small group wanted to do a quarter on the life of Jesus, they could use the video series in connection with the study guide, have their Bibles open, and have a slower study with the Gospels. Same thing with 1 Samuel. We basically did Searching for a King around the text of 1 Samuel. So if you're wanting to do a study on 1 Samuel, you've got something. We want people to interact with the Word and not just be entertained. All of our stuff is currently full color, but I love the books. We've been using the other one with our kids. Podcasts started getting to be a thing. We thought, hey, we don't have to travel overseas to make podcasts, so let's make podcasts. So we have Inroads, Digging Deeper, and Listen, My Children. You can find them wherever you find podcasts. Listen, My Children is special because it's Justin's. Justin is trying to help people think through how to do family devotions. And so Listen, My Children is Justin interacting with his family and trying to show us what that looks like. And so for those of us who are dads trying to figure out what are some ideas that I could use, that's a great resource. I think Justin did a fantastic job with that. Just some feedback that we've received from folks all over the place. Someone from Florida said, we've seen an increase in class attendance, interest, participation, and positive feedback. Thank you so much for all the work, your team, to make this available. I've recommended it to several people in other congregations. Someone in Saudi Arabia. I'm going to show you guys a map in just a second. And I want you to think about this. I've never been to Saudi Arabia. I probably will never go to Saudi Arabia. But there are people around the world that I've never met, but they're getting this material. And so think about ways that you can share the gospel. Obviously, first person with the people that you know is a great way to start. But there are such opportunities to reach people with the gospel. Saudi Arabia, watching those videos has meant so much to us, brought new life and understanding to our Bible reading. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Deb in New Zealand, I wish I could visit New Zealand. I've just finished watching both your series and learned so much. Thank you very much. And I love what she said. I was so pleased to get some visuals to help me when reading the Bible. So one of the benefits to the visuals and what Stu was looking for when he was teaching his class is that there are some gaps in our understanding when we read the Bible. Because we're separated by time, we're separated by cultures, we're separated by geography. When I read things for the first time, I typically imagine things like where I grew up in Oregon. So when I hear rivers, I think about the Columbia. And when I think mountains, I visualize Mount Hood. But Mount Hood is just one type of mountain, right? And so to be able to see some of these visuals helps me to visualize more what Jesus was talking about and the land that he was in, the people that he was around. And it helps me fill in those gaps of understanding that can be there. That is a neat picture. There are only so many countries in the world, right? All of the yellow, orange, it's kind of a mix between the two, are places where people have accessed, viewed, and streamed, and downloaded our content. God gets the glory for that. Those are souls. Those aren't just numbers, and those aren't just colors on a map. Those are people who are trying to figure something out about the Bible, and they're looking for resources. So far, we've been really blessed. People have offered to help us to subtitle our videos, some of our videos in Spanish, Finnish, and Russian. And then we have some folks that are working on subtitling them in Filipino, Tagalog, and Portuguese. And what happens is someone watches it, and they say, hey, I know someone, or I have family in such and such a place, and I would like them to be able to watch it. Could I help you? And we say, yes. Absolutely. If you know someone that would like to help with that, just let us know. We've been really blessed with our viewership so far since the release of Following the Messiah in 2016. Up to this point, we've had 1.7 million views on all of our platforms and almost 22 million minutes watch. So especially YouTube and all of these platforms, they track the minutes viewed. So it's not just someone watched the video, because people will watch and they lose interest and they turn it off. And so it tells us down to the minute how many minutes are being viewed. And we track all of our series to see how they're doing and how people are receiving them. And those are the platforms, the primary platforms that we're on right now. YouTube, PurePlex, Right Now Media, Prime Video. We have reading schedules connected with our videos in YouVersion, which is really, really neat. If you guys don't have YouVersion app, you should get it. And also Faith Life with Logos. And that's the projection, that's the current projection. Why do you think that green line jumped? COVID. COVID. I mean, we had a lot of plans as a team. We were supposed to go to Turkey in March or April of last year, and then COVID. And all of a sudden, churches were not assembling in person. They were trying to study virtually over the computer. They were looking for resources like yesterday. And our numbers went like crazy. And we could not keep ahead of trying to provide resources to people. So there was an opportunity to serve people in a really big way. Those numbers. Yeah, be praying about that. The thing that we're really excited about is a project that we've been working on for about 2 years, and it's what I'm going to spend the rest of our time tonight showing you. Is a two-hour-long documentary. So something new for us. We left Israel. We went to Turkey. Most of our team has never been to Turkey. Mr. Barry has never been to Turkey. He didn't go this trip either. He still hasn't been to Turkey. So we went to a new country, but instead of doing multiple episodes, so an episodic project, we did a whole documentary. It's almost 2 hours long. Lord willing, that will be coming out before the end of the year. It's just about done. And it's on the seven churches of Revelation 2 and 3. It's called Trial and Triumph, Revelation's Churches. So I'm going to pull up, Craig sent me a sneak peek. So the only other group to see this outside of our focus groups is Salt Camp down in Tennessee in June, and then y'all. So you guys get to see this. I'm curious about the feedback. It's almost done, so like, make it good feedback. And while I'm pulling that up, is there a question or two that I can answer for you really quick? This project? A little over 2 years by the time it's done. From the time our team sat down in a conference room and we were brainstorming and charting out our projects for 2 to 3 years because we work on things simultaneously.
Jeremy is almost
3 years.
It was March 2019.
Man, almost 3 years. Yeah, and we were supposed to be done much earlier. We tried to go, October was our third attempt to go to Turkey. It's hard to make something on the seven churches when you can't get to the seven churches. Yeah.
Are you guys following a specific path?
That's a great question. So, are we following a specific path? Yes. So, when you read Revelation 1 through 3, the seven cities that had churches that received Revelation, there's a sequence, right? Starting with Ephesus. And so, we started with Ephesus and followed that sequence as we told the story of the seven churches. Which was a very intentional plan. We sat down and as much as possible, we tried to let the biblical text dictate the story. We're trying to tell the story that's in the text. So we have to pay attention to those details. All right, let's get Ephesus going here. And Craig just sent me some of this today.
To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. I know you are enduring patiently, and bearing up for my name's sake, and you have not grown weary. But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen. Repent, and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place, unless you repent. Yet this you have, you hate the works of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who conquers, I will grant to eat of the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God.
By the time of Paul and John in the first century, because of silting, the harbor had significantly decreased in size until it was reached by this narrow channel coming in from the Aegean Sea.
The archaeologists have documented at least 25 to 30 temples and sanctuaries to the various gods and goddesses in the Greek pantheon here in the city of Ephesus being the temple warden or temple keeper of Artemis. Now we have the merger of that with imperial cult worship.
As we walk up and take a look at these columns, they're really fascinating. You can see how very nicely carved into the stone here are the names of the elite of this city, who functioned as both in the Artemis cult as well as in the leadership in the assembly of the province of Asia. The who's who of Ephesus in the first century.
Now, how does that connect to some of the letters in Revelation 2 and 3?
Well, we see a promise, of course, of the victors in Philadelphia, that those who are steadfast and endure, their names are going to be written on the columns in the heavenly temple. And so it's a great promise. So obviously their names aren't going to be written in the earthly columns like this.
But Jesus used something culturally that they understood in passing in. So what can we see that would help us understand the culture of the imperial cult here in Ephesus?
So we're walking out on the terrace for the state agora. And over to our left-hand side, we see the platform for the later imperial cult temple that was built under Domitian and then later rededicated to his father and brother. But this is part of the valley, and so the placement of these imperial cult temples was very important too.
location, location, location.
Right.
And so this made a very much a statement, a city at Ephesus, who is Lord? In the museum, you'll see one of the heads from the statues. So these supersized emperors that ruled over this city. But you really get a perspective as you stand front of this monumental structure here, and everyone would see that imperial
visual.
The reason for the emperor worship was not religious, it was political. They were using that system to keep their empire together. And anybody who would offer incense to the emperor was looked upon as a bad citizen and a dangerous one.
We're looking at a beautiful fountain dating to the early 2nd century. The leading citizen dedicated this to the Emperor Trajan. So, any idea what that round thing is?
No.
The ancients actually understood that the world is round. And so it's the globe, the globus.
He's got his foot on it.
Yeah, right foot showing domination. Again, we're looking at symbolism, how important it was of the Roman power in the empire, especially here in the city of Ephesus. Oh, this is a great goddess of victory. And she's got her left arm outstretched, holding something. Any idea what that
means? It looks like a wreath.
It is a wreath. The theme of victory, of course, is very important to Revelation.
Huge.
The Greek word nikao ends the promise of speech of the seven churches there to the one who is victorious. The promise is that they will receive the crown, or really wreath of life. And then in one of his later visions, John's looking up to heaven, and he sees a crowd there, and they're wearing white robes, but what are they holding? Palm branches. So what's Nike holding there?
Yeah,
palm branches. So they are the victors. They have overcome and have made their way into the presence of God.
So culturally, what's the significance? When would people here in Ephesus have seen someone receiving a wreath?
Oh, at the games that would be held regularly in the stadiums here and in many of the cities of the seven churches.
So the idea of athletic competition was very relatable to the audience of Revelation.
Yeah, they love their sports just as much as we do today. Yeah.
I don't think it's an overstatement to talk about how impressive it is to walk the streets of Ephesus. All along the way, you would have had these statues and these busts. You would have seen all of these idols placed there. It just would have been overwhelming to walk that street and to see how prolific idolatry was. And it was just in your face. Then you tie into that the idea of Artemis and her temple that would have been there. When you hear that, you think back to Acts and you think about the riot that took place in Ephesus because of the influence of Paul, the statues of Artemis or Diana, but their sails had gone down. It was just everywhere. It permeated their whole culture. To walk the streets and think about what would that have been like as a Christian? To have a temple dedicated to a deity or to an emperor. And you didn't have that. Like, you didn't have a visible temple. You didn't have a statue of your God. You didn't have anything like that to try to impress people in some emotional way. But when you read through Revelation, Jesus is trying to help them develop an awareness of the spiritual reality that they have. You get to Revelation 4 and 5, and we are ushered into the throne room of God. We're given a picture of God seated on his throne. We're given a picture of Jesus walking into this place where these living creatures and 24 elders are praising God and praising Christ. So Jesus is trying to give his disciples an awareness of the spiritual reality that we do have a temple and that each of us is a part of that and that God dwells in us. We do have something and it's real and it lasts and it's not going to fall down and it's not going to be left in ruins.
So we seem to be in a really domestic area as we come through these terraced houses.
Well, this is really the lifestyles of the rich and famous, but we know that the early church was not just comprised of poor people.
Right.
Now, we have some richer elite members in the congregation, too. Mm-hmm. They're very much attracted to the monotheism of Judaism, and then now is Jesus as Lord of Christ. Mm-hmm. And
And so they would have lived in these houses here in Ephesus. But they kind of give us some idea of some things we read about in Revelation. One of them has to do with dining spaces and the whole issue of eating food sacrificed to idols.
Yes.
So this would have occurred in the dining hall, like we're looking here. Dining couches around the horseshoe-shaped dining area, mm-hmm. servants bringing food in here. But the whole event would have been first offered up to one of the pagan deities.
Okay, so that would have been a huge struggle. You become a Christian, can you continue to participate in these meals that are associated with idols?
Yeah, so the Christians are starting to withdraw from public and social events.
Yeah.
And they're considered antisocial. So they're kind of breaking the customs that are accepted.
Now, what's this area with all of the columns on the opposite side of the dining hall?
So in these terrace houses, we have a number of what's called peristyle houses. On the inside of the peristyle, this is open to the elements. There's a roof, and they would collect rainwater and cisterns under here. Mm-hmm. And then the living areas would be around here, the bedrooms, the kitchen. If you have a richer member in the congregation, this would be an ideal place for a house church meeting.
Oh, absolutely. I can imagine that. So it could be that the churches in Revelation are assembling in places like this.
Yeah, very much so.
You really get some perspective up here of how large these houses were.
They're just one on top of another as we move our way up to the top of the terrace. These rooms, as you can see, were just gorgeously painted. And we can also see signs of redecorating, where they chipped away the plaster and then put another layer. So the woman of the house says, hey honey, we need to redecorate. So
yeah.
She does that. So we have examples of that as well.
Going through the terrace houses at Ephesus was, I don't know how to describe that. Most people, when they think about going to worship, assembling with their church family, most congregations have a property or a building that they've constructed and they've got a sign out front, their own paved parking lot. Some people have large signs to advertise who they are. But that is not how most congregations get started even today. And that's certainly not how they got started back in the first century. Thinking about a place like this is likely where the congregation there in Ephesus got started, where they're meeting in these open courtyards, they're meeting in these personal homes and places that can accommodate size. It's not about trying to have some super impressive place, it's about meeting the needs. Where can we meet? So I thought about that as we were walking through the courtyards and thinking how little has changed between the first century and now.
This is a combination of two things. It's a library, for one. It's also the mausoleum and the burial place for a very well-known governor of the province of Asia. It was built by his son for Celsus in the early second century. And the significance about Celsus is he was the governor of the province of Asia at the end of John's life. So they were contemporaneous. But the Austrian archaeologists have reconstructed this really incredible structure. We know very clearly, Josephus and other writers tells us that there were Jews in the city, but archaeologically speaking, very little has been found. But when they were excavating here in the library and doing the restoration some years ago, they found this very interesting thing. So what do we got here?
Oh, wow. So right on the face, you've got a menorah. You've got the seven wicks.
Yep. So they carved this lovely menorah right here in the step of the library itself.
How incredible is that?
Yeah.
To be in Ephesus, saw several finds from the material culture that explain some of the imagery that is used in Revelation, that the first century readers would have understood quite readily, to see the city and see how steep it was in idolatry and for worship, the pressure to compromise and try to keep a foot both in the Christian faith but in idolatry and emperor worship. It would have been hard, but if your family has been a Christian family for a period of time
and there's this economic influence to try to get your compromise or else you're going to suffer, that would be a temptation. And there are pressures in our culture today on Christians to compromise, to soften our message, to soften our morals, and to try to make Christianity more palatable, more marketable, more acceptable to people. Hopefully that'll help people relate to the Ephesians and understand that they're just like us. They're facing some of the same things and the same temptations and trials, that if we were in their shoes, we would be tempted to leave our first love and not be as zealous exclusively for Jesus as we ought to be. So today has been really extraordinary. And to the angel of the church is...
Oh, he left off a couple seconds. Oh, going smart. Questions? While I pull something else up, any questions or input? Yeah.
Is Norman, how did you get there without tourists? When were you there?
So we get asked that a lot pre-pandemic, but you got to remember it's October.
This
was October 2020, so most of the world was not traveling.
Was it closed at the time you were there?
It was not. It was open.
And it was that empty?
What's that?
And it was that empty?
It was that empty. So we went to Ephesus twice during our production trip. We went the first day to hit some of the highlights and then to get some of the beauty shots that you saw with the sun coming over the hill as we came out of the Library of Celsus. We acquired a permit for both trips, but we acquired a permit to get there an hour before they opened. So we got there at 7 a.m. and we had the run of the place for an hour before anyone else got there. So we had time lapses going. We had two different crews, one at the top of the hill, one at the bottom of the hill. And then when we shot the menorah shot, you can see some people walking around us, but we try to block the set. You know, we'll have somebody, hey, we got a camera down there. Can you wait just a second? But it was fairly empty. Yeah. Good question. Yes.
Do you know what your next project
is? I know what I want it to be. So the question is, do we know what our next project is going to be? We have a list. We've got a list. I don't know yet. Yes.
Do you get extra access, or are you in the place of paying tourists to go?
Ephesus, you can go to all the places that we went. So Library of Celsus, I mean, it's just wide open. It's not super big. Like behind that big wall with the windows, it's no bigger than this. Like it's not super big. The terrace houses, anybody can go in the terrace houses. But there are some places in the project that you will not be able to go. So when we go to Smyrna, they have a graffiti wing of the Acropolis, and it's blocked off the gate. And so we had to contact someone from the archaeological team to open it up for us, and he had to escort us when we went in there. So there's some places we go that people can't. But I'd say 70-80%, anybody who goes on a tour can go.
How much did the production cost?
I don't want to speak off the top of my head. A lot. So I'll give you a big number, and it's not the top. So over $100,000. Okay. But let's put that in perspective. Okay, we need to put that in perspective. How many people here have seen The Chosen? Okay. Anyone know how much money The Chosen raised for their first season? If I remember, you guys can correct me later, that production team raised $2.5 million for their first season of production. We haven't come close to that, and we've cranked out all of that. Now, you know, Craig's working for peanuts. It's just that if someone gave us $1 million, we'd do a lot with it. So if you know somebody. Yeah.
When the first picture you showed of Craig and Stu together, they were at an award ceremony.
Yes.
So the academia production company has won awards for the quality material, which is nothing on its own.
Yes.
Present the gospel. And they're doing it on a budget that every other media production crew would lack.
Yeah, that's a great point. So if you guys came here, Justin, I'm just going to brag on production side for a second, because they need it. I go around and I do this quite a bit, and people see my face when they see this. But look, those guys are talented. Craig and Stu and Jet and Danny and all the people that are working cameras, they are crazy talented. And we talk about this every time we start a project. You know, how can we tell the next story better? You know, how can we improve? How can we hone our craft? How can we, and it's not about showing off, it's about how can we improve? Because the equipment improves and it gets smaller and more portable. And so if you didn't hear Justin, our second production, Searching for a King, has been submitted to two different film festivals, at least two, and it was a runner-up in one of them and actually won in a category in another, which says a lot about the talent that those people have. And we're very, very blessed to have every single one.
So, like, how does the study material, like, play into that? Because it didn't, just like watching that clip, didn't seem like there was like a lot of interactivity with like the study material, like most curious, like say maybe more of the video scenes would be more interactive to like kind of go along with working along with it.
Yeah, so Jonathan's asking, if you were to do a study and you're trying to incorporate video into the study, how do you do that? You tell us. Because we've been playing with that dynamic for 5 years. And really the study guide that we wrote for the Messiah series was an afterthought. Like, we're just going to shoot the thing, and we're like, we need a study guide. And we got better after that one. Justin started helping after that one. So the way that we have figured it out is with the life of Jesus and the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has 13 lessons. Following Messiah has 26. And at the beginning of every single one of those lessons, there's a QR code. You guys know what those are? Because restaurants have gone crazy with them during COVID, right? You hover your phone over the QR code and it pops a link. And so you're using your media device, your iPad hooked up to whatever, and you hit that QR code and it pulls up a video clip for that lesson from our series. And you play 3 to 5 minutes, you turn it off because we do not want you glued to the screen for Bible study. It's just a teaching tool. And then you start going through the curriculum in the lesson. So that's how Following the Messiah, Searching for a King works. We actually have done something different for Trial and Triumph. We've had people asking us for the last several years for devotional material. So instead of a 13 or 26 week study guide, we have written a month long devotional. So 31 devotions, Justin? Justin, Stuart, and I each wrote devotions, and at appropriate times, there's a QR code for you to hit with your mobile device and watch a section of the documentary. So it's more for personal study, so that book's a different type of book, but that's what we've come up with. If you guys have a better idea, please tell us.
I'll just say, I had a study a couple of years ago with a guy who was a fairly new Christian, and we're going through the Gospels, and he just has a hard time with reading comprehension. But showing him some clips from Following the Messiah, we would just sit down. Sometimes we would just watch a whole episode. Sometimes we would just use clips from it. And it really helped him, like, connect what we were reading in the Gospels with, like, oh, these are real places, these are real people. Especially for someone who's just not into reading just a text, having the visuals really helped our study and was a great blessing to us. And it was, of course, able to be free to him, and that was just such a blessing.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear people using it that way. I know some congregations, like, our thought behind Appian Media, the Appian Way is a Roman, ancient Roman road system to help Rome transport troops and everything else easily throughout the empire. And students of Gospels can look at that and say, hey, providentially, God used those roads to help spread the gospel further and faster. And so when Stu and Craig came up with this, their thought was, what is our Appian way of our generation? And their thought was the internet. And there's a bunch of stuff on the internet that you really wish wasn't on the internet. But what if we used it in a redemptive way to help spread the gospel further and faster than people thought? Yes.
What
things that people have been asking us for years is the journeys of Paul. So doing the journeys of Paul. But anyone who has read Acts and the epistles, and like 80% of the New Testament, how do you shoot that in 2 weeks? Like, you don't. Just the number of countries that you would go through in a production trip for one journey. But one of the things that we've seen God do through this process is he connects us with people who have great ideas. And during this last trip to Turkey, I was introduced to somebody who has visited, he believes he's visited every place that the New Testament says Paul stopped. Pretty cool. And he has a unique idea that I had not thought of about how to pull off a production trip and start doing the journeys of Paul. So that's my wish, is to start doing that. AJ?
He changes the gifts and salt.
Yes. Yes. All right, I want to show you guys a couple of fun things, because these are just fun. One of the things that we started doing on our trips since we were away from our spouses, for a couple of team members, they had never been out of the country before, and they had never been away from their wives for that long before. And so they're video guys. And so their idea was, I'm going to make a video journal and send it to my wife every night on top of everything else that we're doing. So, like, we're shooting this major production, but then they're shooting and editing and posting little clips every day on top of that. So they've kept that going, and these are just some of the clips that they've shared. This is Jet in Turkey.
I know, I'm way in the I should just sit here, you guys. It's so wild. Been walking around with this, they're calling it RoboCop. We have the C200, which is a really heavy camera. This camera gimbal fits onto this spring arm like this, and it's attached to my vest. And really, I can let go of the camera,
right?
And it kind of stays put. So I can work on controlling the camera and operating the camera and getting all the moves that we might want. Yeah, second dance.
So it's pretty much a piece of cake. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. This is absolutely a piece of cake. It's no big deal. Now I'm not in pain.
Sounds great. I love Jet. And I'm going to brag on him. I did this at, I think I did this at Salt. I'm going to brag on Jet. Because he would never tell you this. Okay, so when you meet him, you cannot tell him I told you this. When Jet was young, he injured the back of one of his ankles, and he does not have full range of motion in one of his feet. So, you know, you can point down and point up, and he can only point up a little ways. So you think about the terrain that we're walking on when we go up mountains and down stuff, or upstairs and downstairs, and he's trying to balance all this stuff all day long, and he never complains. Ever, ever, ever. Jet is one of the most humble guys you'll ever meet, so I want to brag on Jet for a minute. I told you we would see Lydia, Dan's daughter.
This is Jet from Rutgers, Oregon. Practicing champion. Listen, when you're in Turkey and you're traveling the world, you do one thing that you're supposed to do when you're in country and not a tourist. You eat Turkish delight. Powder, sugar, goodness. You got pistachios on some of them. You've got peanut butter and stuff on some of them. Pomegranate, jellies. No, it's not dessert. It's fruit. With a lot of sugar.
So we started this almost a tradition,
not quite a tradition.
When Craig called me, he contacted four or five different guys to try out to start hosting, and for whatever crazy reason, they asked me to help. But that was also the a year, like he called me 6 weeks after our second son passed away. And I really wrestled with whether I should leave the country for 2 weeks and be away from my family 4 months after our second son passed away. And so we prayed about it and talked about it, and I didn't want to be away from Keenan for that time. And so I asked the guys, and they were super, super sweet, and they said, you know, if we could swing the cost of Keenan going, Keenan could come with us. And so Keenan went with us, but we were really strict with them. We said, look, this is a production trip. Donors have donated money. This is work. We cannot slow down for you. You've got to keep up. When we say we're hiking up a mountain in 100-degree weather, we're hiking up a mountain. And like anyone his age would have, yes, I will do. So Keenan went with us the first trip. He went with us the second trip to finish following Messiah. Barry brought his son Samuel to be a water boy for that one. And it's not just water boys. Like, they're carrying gear. They end up putting cameras in the guy's hands to shoot behind the scenes stuff. And then this last October, Dan brought his daughter Lily. And the guys make it clear, look, if you can foot the bill somehow for their cost, and they work. So it's basically free labor for the team. we'll do a couple more. These are short. Then I'll give you guys your spirit resources. Any of those titles look interesting to you?
Czar Source of Healing.
Czar Source of Healing. Let's see, where is that Elijah? Here we go. Here we go.
Jet, you found a snake?
Not quite. I didn't find it. Somebody else found it. The skin of the snake, whip snake, crawled around the Sia, decided to get a couple close shots at it. Just kind of lowered them in. I think it's a good representation of what we've captured so far with that Greek hospital.
Yeah, the Asclepion, you'll see the columns with the snake wrapped around, which is generally a staff. And the snake was associated with healing. And we even think about the story of Moses on the bronze serpent. Even modern medicine uses the caduceus as well as the staff of the Asclepion.
So, Dan, you are dead.
Sweet. I feel better already. I think I'll go for a walk.
Yeah, AJ.
Oh, the coffee one in Turkey. Let's see.
Did I pass it?
Truth of the vine.
Oh, you drink what? Oh, this is gold here. So, pay attention to Stuart's face, okay? And then we'll explain.
We are watching Turkish coffee. Like, this is authentically how you make Turkish coffee. You know, this sand pit, it's warming up. You put the coffee grounds in the bottom and then put the water on top of it. And we're about to drink it in the traditional way. This is the way Jeremy did it.
It is not.
Okay, you have a problem? Right? Yeah, that's cool.
That's a problem. Okay. I want to back it up right about there. Yeah, I feel like we're on America's Family Funny Studios or something.
I'm not behind you. I don't know what's going on. You're good.
So to explain what he thought was going to happen, there was a lady that works for the archaeological team at Laodicea who grew up in Philadelphia. So like her neighborhood was built on the ancient remains of Philadelphia. And when we interviewed her, we sat around and she and I had Turkish coffee, traditional Turkish coffee. And do you all know what traditional Turkish coffee is? Nasty. So the grounds, the coffee grounds, are finer than espresso grounds. Okay, so powdery coffee. And they put it in that pot, and there's a heater underneath the sand, so it's heating it all the way around. It comes to a boil really quick. They do not filter it. They swirl it and pour it into a little tiny shot. And you drink it all, powder and all, extra fiber and grit in your teeth and all, and it is nasty.
and it is bitter and it's hot. And what Ingie explained to me when we had it for our interview, she had a little dish of hard rock candy that she called hardened Turkish delight. And the way they drink it is they get a little piece of that rock candy, pinch it between their teeth, and they suck their coffee through the sugar, which seems like so much work to sweeten coffee. And so I tried it. I got this. It actually made the coffee taste a little bit better. What Stuart had was a dry piece of bread. It was like a little piece of biscotti. And so he put it in his mouth, in the back of his mouth, and, and it fell apart and fell. So I was not there for that, to help him before he did it, which provided that comedy gold.
Normally we're good forward.
Yes.
We should jump out. Try to just be patient and long suffering. But really, I'm just waiting to hear a crutch. I'm not good with cars, but normally when I ride in the cars go forward. Ours was going forward.
We're looking for the slip yard. We went down a very narrow road, and then there was going to be a shortcut.
And then there was enough of a twisty twist in the road that we could no longer go forward. Now, if they even thought that there was like a 5% chance we could have made it, they would have tried.
Yeah.
We are man enough to admit defeat, and we are reversing.
And several things that have been interesting with the driver today. But all in all, the drivers, the pigs are doing a great job. And they're getting us to all the locations.
Someone we need to brag on, that I have not bragged on yet. So you saw the guy in the black t-shirt and the glasses kind of boxing things around. We hire someone, we hire drivers, and we hire someone called a fixer. So we give our list, him, her, the fixer was a woman's done. Our list of everywhere we're going to go, and she's the one who gets our permits, she's the one who schedules stuff, she's the one who makes the phone calls, and makes sure that we get to go where we want to go. And so if we didn't have those drivers, and that gentleman in the black t-shirt, he was amazing. He was basically our guide. We couldn't do what we do. So you guys have been really patient, and I've gone about 10 minutes long. So you can watch all that stuff. Go to appymedia.org, find us on Facebook, find us on YouTube. Use that. I hope it's an encouragement to you. If you need help with additional resources, please let me know. And think about ways that God has blessed you with talents that you can use to help glorify Him and spread the gospel. All right? Joe?